B2. From Atomistic Thinking to Cybernetic Comprehensive Consciousness. Number 1A.
Now, we have come here for a nice long session in Organquit. And Organquit is apparently an Indian name. And translated into English or American, it means the shadow of the good things to come. So I think this is rather symptomatic for our week's work. The shadow of the good things to come. Now, I have a rather difficult position insofar that I see among the audience quite a few who have been studying the science, Christian Science, for over 20 years, others that have been interested in the science of Christian Science perhaps only a few years, and others who are rather new. Now, this makes it rather difficult for me to find the right rhythm, so to say, in which to progress, and so that those who are young in the science of Christian Science get something, and that those who are old hands in it don't get bored. So I felt what I want to do is to give a survey of the whole subject. Now, if one gives a survey of a subject, naturally one can't go into any detail. Now, this has a rather great advantage, namely that if one gives a survey, especially as I want to do it in a way that it has unfolded to us, that then thought is led more or less in an ordered way up to where we are. Now, you see, a teacher or lecturer can have two very different aims in view if he gives a summer school or a talk like this. He can either decide that he wants to be very inspirational and just lift the audience up and up and up and up, up to the clouds, and then they go home and fall down out of the clouds. That's one way one can do, and in various situations it may be the right thing to do. The second point is that one can aim to give to the students the method of self-teaching or the method of self-education. And this requires quite a different technique and quite a different presentation. Now, I have decided for this week to aim at this second point, namely to try to give you, so to say, the methodology of Christian Science, the methodology of how to teach oneself the subject, how to be one's own teacher, one's own student, and so dig into the books oneself. So what I'm going to do in the first week is to present all the fundamentals as we have seen them and understood them up to now. And this is quite a big subject. Then the next week we want to have a seminar, and in that seminar we will mostly just dwell on that standpoint of the four levels, and we'll discuss that standpoint together. Now, don't be afraid of the seminar. I have a feeling that quite a few are a bit afraid of that next week. I'm not going to ask a direct question to a specific student, so this is not an examination, but it will be a very free discussion, anyway I hope so, where everybody can participate, and those who are a bit shy of participating, well, they just sit there and listen and get something out of that. Naturally, I hope that there are a few who will talk and will share what they have found out. Now, you see, many people are very in earnest in the study of Christian Science by reading, whatever they can read on the subject of Christian Science. Well, that's quite all right for the beginning, but it doesn't lead anywhere. It leads so far, no further, because reading and reading is culturing a consciousness which is only receptive from outside, only accepts what somebody else has seen or written, and does not cultivate in the student that higher ability to be creative within himself. Now, naturally you see how limited the first thing is, namely just to read and to listen, and you are limited to what you can read and or what you hear in a lecture or so. Whereas if we could cultivate the method of self-revelation, of creative thinking, then each one would always be at every moment, under any circumstance, no matter if he has science and health with him or not, if he has the Bible with him or not, can be creative, and therefore can be of much greater import for the whole idea. One notices that those who read a lot are those who are usually the least creative, whereas those who read usually little but know what to read and how to digest it and then build on those fundamentals, that they are those who are creative in this idea and who can lead on the idea. We always have to see that we are in the position, or that we come to the point where we can always be leading on and leading on the idea, unfolding and unfolding the idea. We can never stand still. So, what I want to do this week is to present you as much as I can the whole picture and leaving out all the details as far as possible, and leave that to the individual's own study at home. Now, what is my methodology in teaching? I think I want to point this out as clearly as I can, because I feel if I can show you the different methodology which one can use, then you have really got the click, so to say, for the whole week. In general, if we take the old way of teaching Christian Science, say more the conventional teaching of Christian Science, of class teaching and so on, you know that it is mostly a teaching which goes out from all the problems which mankind has, from the disharmonious conditions with which each one has to deal, and then try to show through the Christian Science teaching how to deal with those problems, how to deal with indigestion, how to deal with a financial problem, how to deal with a marriage problem, how to deal with sleeplessness, and how to deal with a false relationship, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. How long? The whole life. Because trouble never stops. So, the usual teaching is to take such common disharmonious problems and situations and show what is the fact about them, the truth about the life. It is constantly always showing facts, facts, facts about lies, lies, lies. That's all, usually. And naturally, this is not leading very far, because the problems that come are so manifold, are always so much different, always other problems come along, and then you are at loss, or at sea, I think you say, because you don't know how to handle them, because your teacher or the books we have read have never touched on that problem. The other method which I would like to show is something completely different. I want to teach this whole 2 weeks from a completely different standpoint. Namely, not to go out from any problems, but to go out from the Infinite One, which is Spirit. Now, if the Infinite One is Spirit, and Spirit is indivisible, then there are no isolated ideas, and there are no isolated problems. Then we cannot say, I have to deal with this problem, and he has to deal with that problem, and the other one has to deal with this and the other problem. If we go out from the Infinite One Spirit, which is indivisible, and see that this Spirit cannot be divided up in any sections, in any parts and particles, in no numerous problems and so on, then we really begin to look at the whole thing from a overall standpoint of the Infinite. This, I would say, is the comprehensivist's point of view. The other was the point of view of the atomistic standpoint. If you have here a problem, there a problem, here a problem, it is that atomistic standpoint where you always are mesmerized to one single problem, to one single proposition which you like to solve. Whereas if we take that second method, which I want to show, then we have that standpoint of the comprehensivist, of that which never lets the whole be split up in any part. So these are the two extreme standpoints, the standpoint of the atomic standpoint, or that of the comprehensivist. Now, from, and this is the point, you see, from the standpoint of the comprehensivist, from the standpoint of Infinite Spirit, which cannot be divided, there are no isolated ideas, and there are no isolated problems. There are only infinite aspects of the whole, always of the whole, so that everything which we have to contemplate or to solve or so is always solving something of the whole, is always taking in the whole view of the whole, and never a tiny little part. This naturally is a completely different approach, because then, from that standpoint, we always consider anything as an aspect of the whole, never as a part of the whole, or never as something which concerns me. The moment we have a feeling I have a problem which concerns me, the moment I say I have, I separate the infinite I in a personal I and make it very small, very tiny. This is the atomization of the infinite. And as you know, just as in material science, atomization doesn't lead very far, it is destruction. The integrated sense of bringing everything together into the one whole is really that which is necessary. So that whatever we will consider will never be from the focal point of an isolated idea or an isolated problem, but always from the consciousness of the Infinite One, the One Spirit. Actually, this One Spirit has infinite aspects, but these infinite aspects are not parts of the whole. They are always the whole. They are only different aspects, but always of the whole. And if we could couch within ourselves that wonderful consciousness which is always engaged in contemplating the whole in its infinite variation of the whole, in its infinite ordering of the whole, in its infinite structuring of the whole, but always of the whole, then we culture within ourselves a consciousness of completion, of perfection. So you see, whereas perhaps for a long time we have been interested in the atomistic sense of Christian Science, where we felt perhaps that the problem had to be solved through a right sense of, say, substance, or a right sense of intelligence, or a right sense of provision, or a right sense of joy, of anything like that. We were perhaps then taking the concordances and were looking up all what Mrs. Eddy said on substance or on intelligence or on power in order to form to ourselves a more roundabout, a more complete sense of this atom, not of the whole. We were therefore culturing an atomistic sense of being. The new sense would be that we would see that these problems or ideas or propositions or experience, whatever we call them, are always a proposition of the whole of being. They can never be split away from the whole of being. Therefore, that there are always a proposition which must be considered from the whole. Now, if I can make that clear and intelligently clear, then I think we have caught the right tone. You see, perhaps I could show that on the blackboard in a pictorial way. See, if you have, if we, for instance, have the Infinite One, let's put it lightly, and say we had a lot of single problems, and I make it like a little dot, all these problems. You know, here a problem, here a problem, here a problem. We have this atomistic sense, just a dot, a point, an atom, just the dust in the face of the infinite. And we were considering these little dots, and we were considering, say, here substance, what is substance, and trying to find through the concordance everything, what is substance, and what Mrs. Devi says about substance. So, well, it's all right, but it's the beginning. It's the first approach, it's an atomistic approach, it's a metaphysical approach. But it doesn't lead anywhere, because it stands alone. It stands absolutely unrelated to the whole. Now, the moment we take the idea of science, the moment we see that, and see that actually there is no such a thing in the whole of universe as power per se, or intelligence per se. You know what I mean, per se? As such? Mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. There isn't. Because if there would be power per se, then we would say that power is something divided, separated from the infinite. Therefore, we can only begin to realize what such an idea, such a point is, by seeing the system of reference of the infinite. We would put it like this. Here, where the point of intersection is, you have a point. Actually, it isn't a point. You can never find a point. It is only this category, the vertical category and the horizontal category, touching at a certain place. That's all. And so, if we have a system of reference which belongs to the whole, a system of reference where the whole can be classified in categories, then the moment we understand the infinite in its categories, this is a category, this is a category, this may be another category, then this point of intersection is something very much different. Then it is a point which is defined by the various categories of the one being. And you have at once something which is infinitely bigger than just an isolated idea. Now this, if you understand this, see, what I mean by this, doesn't matter if it's fully understood, because it will just pervade the whole week. To see that this is the great difference when we come out from a metaphysical contemplation to a scientific contemplation. Because here, each idea, power, substance, joy, and so on, which make up our whole being and which we like so much, are absolutely unrelated in the whole of being. And therefore, because they are unrelated, they have not the power of the infinite in our consciousness. Whereas, the moment we leave out those points and say, I am interested in the infinite one, and go out from this infinite one, which cannot be split up in parts, and see what are the categories of this infinite one, and begin to see this infinite one in its signs as categories, categories, here categories, here a category, you can have another category. Then you get to a point of intersection which has within itself the whole power or the whole dynamics of the infinite one. Can you see what we are driving at in science is not to study anymore this atomistic idea. Those atomistic ideas like this one is given by the infinite and its categories. So if we study the infinite as categories and know what these categories are, we embrace the whole in our consciousness. And in the measure as we know these categories, and naturally through varying these categories, you see, and that's what we are going to show, don't be afraid of it, by varying these categories, by varying the structure of consciousness, we always find new points of intersection. Now, that's quite enough for the moment. We'll see it. Let us first look at the atomistic consciousness. Well, the atomistic consciousness is really the religious consciousness. Religion has been built up within us on that very level, on that very method. Religion has been built up by reading single verses from the Bible. Just out of the whole Bible, one verse, one nice verse, one helpful verse, one comforting verse. But it was just one verse and perhaps a whole sermon on this verse. It was always just talking around one of these atomistic points without really seeing what is in view of the whole. And so we have perhaps been studying the textbook. We have been studying the textbook because we like this sentence, that sentence, this statement, this paragraph, absolutely out of the context of the whole structure of the textbook. And so we could never really find the whole of the
of the textbook. Think about this very simple fact, which always impressed me beyond words, that we have a textbook and you can make a Gallup investigation and ask the Christian Scientist, do you know what is the order of the textbook, of the chapter of the textbook? And I bet that not one out of 10, perhaps one out of 100 guesses, but does not know why, guesses the order of the chapters of the textbook. Now this is a proof that the textbook has not been understood as that whole. See? That the textbook has not been understood like this here. See? As this here. Which has its categories. No matter how the categories are shown. Because if we would see the whole in its categories, we would know very well what is the first chapter, what the second, what must be the third, what must be the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth. But because this whole textbook has never been regarded in its structure, in our method, but always has been read in this way here, you see, with these atomistic sentences, the whole science of Christian Science has never been understood. The science of the textbook has never been understood. You see this in your lesson sermons. That's your lesson sermons. The lesson sermon takes out from the Bible here a verse, there a verse, here a verse, there a verse. Takes out from the whole textbook here a few sentences, here a few sentences, there a few sentences, here a few sentences. Well, you can say to me, but Mrs. Eddy wanted that. Am I going to challenge her? No, I'm not going to challenge her. I'm only going to say that 80 years ago she did that. Nobody can tell me that today she would do the same. Nobody. And 80 years ago, at a time where the whole mentality of people was a religious mentality, naturally it was a great step forward to show that what was in the Bible is also in the textbook. And that these two books corroborate that they are equal in meaning, and that's as far as she could go at that time. You know very well when you have some insight in those times, 1905, that the movement was not ready to take in anything more than just this atomistic sense. But that does not mean that we should stay there. So here, as long as we have this infinite, just with a lot of infinite atomistic dots in it, here a truth, there a truth, a wonderful truth, here a wonderful statement, this sentence helped me a lot, with this sentence I healed this and this, with this sentence I could get over a problem and so on, it is still not science. It is a diffuse infinite. It is not an infinite which has science. And that is what we must be absolutely clear and not try to fool ourselves. Not try to fool ourselves because this idea here has helped us once and has helped us wonderfully. That we say, therefore, that's right, and there I stay, and that's the climax. What is right at one time may no more be right 10 years later, 20 years later, 50 years later, now 60, 70 years later, after Mrs. Eddy was here. So, you see what I therefore want to show is not to talk about wonderful single ideas. What I want to show is the science of it, which means categories. Now, let me quickly go over some of the most important definitions of science.